This is a Pinball News production.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. My name's Jerry Stellenberg. This is Adam Preble, and we're going to talk today about writing custom software for a pinball machine. If you've ever wanted to re-theme or build a homebrew machine, or maybe you just want to change the rules on your existing machine, we're going to talk about how to do that. Now, if you've ever thought about doing custom pinball development before, you've really had two options. One is to use the existing CPU board and somehow write code for it, burn a ROM, get that down there, or to use some kind of custom hardware interface that maybe you've designed and built yourself, done your whole driver circuits and all those things. Both of those solutions, as you can imagine, are quite complicated. You have to understand all the low-level interface logic for a pinball machine. You have to know how to write code to interface to those things. You have to be aware of all the timing and control signals for everything. Well, hopefully by the end of today, Adam and I will convince you, or at least show you, that using a PROC board and a custom open source software development framework called PyProc Game, that it's not nearly as complicated as you probably think. Well, maybe it is. But hopefully it's not to write custom software for a pinball machine. So the agenda for today, I'll give you a couple project goals. We have a couple showcases. One we'll show you in the beginning, one we'll show you in the end of some actual real-life implementations using these things. We'll talk about the hardware, we'll talk about the software, and at the end we'll have a questions and answer session. So if you have questions that come up during the presentation, please hold them till the end. I don't know exactly how tight we'll be for time, so we'll try to get to questions at the end. And if we don't get to all your questions, then we'll be around all day. Feel free to hunt us down and ask us whatever it is you need to know. So the goals of the project were pretty much what I said earlier, to make it easier to write custom software for a pinball machine. We want to make it so you don't have to be an expert in hardware and software and whatever else you might have had to learn in the past to write custom software. The other main goal was we wanted a platform that would work in a whole variety of generations of pinball machines. Specifically, we were targeting WPC machines all the way from the early WPC through WPC 95 and both recent generations of Stern machines, so all White Star and all SAM machines. We wanted to build a platform that would work the exact same way in all these generations of machines. So before we get started going into the details, a little quick video. If you've ever been to the website pinballcontrollers.com, which is the site I run for the PROC board, you've probably come across this video, but let's run through it. It's 6 to 8 months old, but it gives you a good introduction of using this hardware and this software to write custom software. So that video was, like I said, put together about, I guess it's been about 10 months since we put that together. It's everything you saw was custom software. So the light shows, the DMD displays, everything we wrote from scratch. And now we have all that stuff available, so you can build on top of that. We have a Judge Dredd machine. Rob Anthony brought us and is letting us use his Dredd machine over in the Pinball Classics vendor area. So we're going to be there all day showing the latest and greatest version of this. Feel free to come over, play, ask questions. I'll even have a couple boards for sale if you're interested in buying one at the end of the seminar. But 10 months later, we have full voice calls, music, sound effects. It's a fully playable game. Maybe a couple issues we have to work through still, but it's pretty mature, so feel free to come by and check it out later. Okay, so the hardware. What is a PROC board? This is a PROC board, and you'll notice, maybe you can see it, maybe you can't, this is the exact same shape as a WPC CPU board. Similarly, I have a WPC 95 version here, and we also have a Stern mounting plate. So if you look on the back, there's actually 8 mounting holes. This fits in both a White Star machine and a SAM machine, so the same board. All three of these are the exact same circuit board, just on different mounting plates. So once you understand how to write code, how to drop this into one machine, you can do it on any generation of machine. But specifically, the PROC stands for Pinball Remote Operations Controller. And what it does is it independently manages all of the control circuits on a pinball machine. And by independently, what I mean is, once you configure this board with software, you don't have to keep writing your software doesn't have to keep interacting with it. Once it's configured, it'll manage all the hardware on your machine. It'll manage the switch matrix. It'll manage the interface to the driver boards. It'll manage a dot matrix display. And it does this automatically. But it doesn't run code. There's no CPU on this board. There's no processing element. It doesn't run your software. So where do your rules code go? Where do you put the code to run your game? Well, you connect it to some sort of an external computer, whether it's a tower computer, or you can even use a credit card-sized single board computer. As long as this thing has a processing element and a USB connection, you can hook it up. So probably most people want someday to take a little credit card-sized single board computer and drop it in their back box, and no one will ever know that it's not running some stock hardware setup. And yes, I did say USB cable. It doesn't need a parallel port. You don't need to go out and find a motherboard that has some obscure port, parallel port. I know that's an issue for a lot of homebrew designers, is finding motherboards that they can still use because they're using a parallel port. And like I said, the board itself manages all the hardware control systems on a pinball machine. And we'll go through each one of these individually. So the drivers, I'm calling drivers the things that drive all your coils, lamps, flashers, motors, all the playfield features in the machine. The PROC supports 208 drivers. And most of you don't really care about all these details, but if anyone's building a homebrew machine, you're going to want to understand what the hardware can do and what features it can drive. So 32 direct, there are 32 individual pins on this board that you can directly connect to transistor circuits. Though, by the way, this board does not have all the transistors, all the things that sit on a power driver board. You connect this directly to the existing power driver board in the machine. Or if you're building a homebrew machine, you need to figure out a way to drive your actual coils and things, design your own board, or drop in an off-the-shelf WPC or Stern power driver board. So it's got the 32 direct. It's got 176 multiplexed. And by multiplexed, I mean you can access them using the ribbon cable that generally goes from the CPU board to the power driver board. So we can control a whole bunch of drivers. And the way we control those is the hardware exposes a bunch of functions that software can call. So you don't need to write code to individually turn on and off every lamp, every flasher, every coil whenever you want to do this. Although you can, that's the first function. But we also have functions like a timed function, so you can pulse a coil for however long you want, 30 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, just send a command saying pulse the coil. You can do, if you say you want to blink a lamp 15 times a second for 30 seconds, well, you would just call the scheduled function with those parameters, and it would automatically turn on and off the lamp at the appropriate time. So, like I said, you don't need to pay attention to all the intricate details to write code for this thing. The last function is called a pitter-patter, which, as the name kind of implies, it'll turn on and off a driver repeatedly, indefinitely, until you tell it to stop specifically. So the next control system are switches. As you know, switches are fairly important in a pinball machine. And we support 32 direct and a full matrix. Some WPC machines use up to a 9x8 matrix. Stern machines, I believe, use an 8x16 matrix. So we support all that. Like I said before, the PROC automatically scans the matrix for you. It's configurable how fast it does that. You can configure it all the way down to a 1 millisecond scan rate. Why you'd want it slower, I don't know, but the option is there if you want to. And the way it works is while it's scanning the switch matrix, it recognizes when a switch changes. Say a switch goes from open to closed or closed to open. The PROC sees that change, and then it needs to know what to do with it. And what it does with it is totally programmable. So for every switch that you use and every state transition, open, closed, and a couple of debounced states, for every single one of those things, you can individually program a rule to tell the PROC what to do with that switch change. The two main options are notify the host, so tell your software, send a signal out over the USB cable saying a switch changed from open to closed. In fact, it was switch number 32 that changed from open to closed, or whatever. The other thing you can do with it is automatically reconfigure a driver. So you can have the PROC say, switch 12 closed, let me automatically assert coil, turn on coil 10. Why would you want to do that? Well, because we're using a USB connection to the computer from the hardware, there's some time it takes to get that state transition from the machine to the software, process the change, and then update your hardware with whatever it is you want to do. So for something like a flipper or a pop bumper, maybe a slingshot, you want those things to act, react immediately. So you would probably configure your flipper buttons to automatically drive the flipper coils, and vice versa. You'd program them so when you released the flipper button, the coils turned off. Same thing for slingshots, same thing for pop bumpers. Anything that you need to react in real time, you would want to use one of these rules for. And there's a link to additional rules, so you can set up a whole chain of events that happen each time a single switch occurs. I don't know why you'd want to, but you could set it up to, you hit the flipper button and all the flashers or all the coils or all the lamps go crazy. It's all software at that point. You can do whatever you want. We support a DMD. It's the PROC controls all the digital signals that go to the DMD. So we take care of all the timing and all the logic to drive a dot matrix display. We support a bunch of geometries of DMDs, but obviously the standard is 128 by 32. The hardware has support for frame buffers, so you can keep your animations running smoothly. It has it can drive up to 16 levels of dot intensity, so you can try to get 16 colors out of your display. It's got a programmable frame rate if you want to sync it up to 24 or 30 or 25 frames per second because you're trying to show a movie on your DMD for some reason. Maybe you're trying to integrate some movie clips from your favorite theme on your machine. You can program the frame rate. And we also, just like we have switch events that go back to the host to tell your software when switches occurred, you can set up the dot matrix logic to tell you when a frame was displayed. And you do this in order to synchronize your software with the hardware so that everything knows exactly when the frames are displayed. So again, you can keep your animations running smoothly or keep everything synchronized. And the last piece of thing that the hardware supports or drives is an auxiliary bus. On WPC machines, this was used for the alphanumeric displays. On Stern machines, there's a bunch of machines that use the auxiliary bus for LED features on the playfield, or I know there's a scrolling LED display on games like Wheel of Fortune, or World Poker Tour has an LED matrix on the playfield. And those are all connected to what's called an auxiliary bus. And the PROC does support that. You can write code to drive all these things as well. Lastly, kind of a summary, there is a USB interface on the board. It's used to get events from the board down to your software, and when you update your drivers and your lamps, your dot matrix display, all that stuff goes back through the USB cable. And essentially what this does, it allows you, when you're writing custom code for your machine, you don't have to worry about all the low-level details. The PROC controls the hardware, and it does it automatically. So really, all you have to do is worry about writing your game rules, which is probably why you started the project to begin with. So that's it for hardware. I'll pass it over to Adam, who will give you an insight into the software.
Thank you, Jerry. I just want to come up here and say thank you, Jerry. All right. So I'm going to talk to you all about, my name is Adam Preble, by the way, and I'm going to talk to you all about the software options that we have for you for use with the PROC project. There's quite a few of them, and so let's get to it. So what's actually available right now? We have something called libpinproc. That's a C library that allows you to talk directly to the PROC hardware. And this is a really low-level, one-to-one mapping from the features of the PROC directly to the software API. So, you're not really, we haven't made any assumptions about the way that you want to control it. It's just, you're using it directly. And as it says there, it's in C, so you can pretty much get access to that in, I would guess, most any language that supports some sort of extension mechanism, such as Python. So we also wrote PyPinProc, which is a wrapper for libpinproc. It essentially exposes all the functionality of libpinproc to the Python language, which if you're not familiar with it, it's kind of a higher level, significantly higher level language than C. And what that means is that you don't have to do quite so much dirty work. You don't have to mess with pointers. Memory management's handled for you and so forth. And we thought that'd be a nice language to use for writing pinball software. And then the last one I want to mention here is PyProc Game, which we're going to be spending the bulk of our time talking about. And it's a high-level framework, and as you can tell by the Py prefix, also written in Python. So all three of these work together. PyProc Game is built on top of PyPinProc, Pipe Pinproc built on top of Lib Pinproc to provide you kind of a full, you know, stack, if you will, for writing pinball software. And I guess I should mention that, you know, PyProc Game is different from PyPinProc in that, you know, it's higher level, so it's much more focused on, you know, how you want to implement the rules of your game, how you want the display to work. It has a lot of helper stuff to make that a lot smoother. And I should mention that, you know, Python's a great cross-platform language, and C can be made to be cross-platform as well, so you can run on Mac, Windows, and Linux. And the whole point here is that, you know, you can choose whatever level that you want to interact with PROC at. If you don't like the way that, you know, we wrote PyProc Game, then, you know, you can interact with PROC at a much lower level. Or if you really want to, you can get into the FPGA spec and issue buffer commands, but I don't know if I'd recommend that. So why do we choose Python? As it says here, all the answers are spelled out, but it's cross-platform, it's high-level, so it's much more accessible to people. It has some cool introspection features, which we'll make use of in PyProc Game, and it's pretty fast. Certainly not C fast, but it's pretty fast. So what does PyPinProc look like? So here's a line of Python code. We're going to import the PinProc module. So that just means that we're just kind of loading a library here. And then within the PinProc module, we have this object called PinProc with some capital letters. And you can see that we're passing it WPC. So we're telling the PinProc software and the PROC hardware, I'm interacting with the WPC system. Set up all your defaults for driving WPC-style coils and the WPC-style switch matrix. There's also you know, the two Stern varieties and WPC95, and also a custom machine type that doesn't do any sort of setup for you, so you can set up how you need it. So one thing that we might want to do with PyPinProc is get switch events. So the way that works is with getEvents here. GetEvents just returns an array of switch events. So like Jerry was talking about with the switch state changes. So you get a number and then a value that tells you, that describes that state change. So the switch, you know, has become closed, the switch has become open. But even cooler than that would be if we could, you know, affect some actual changes on the pinball machine. So we have here a command, a line of code here, proc.driverPulse, and we pass it a number, 8, and milliseconds, 200. So we're going to pulse driver number 8, which could be a coil, it could be a flasher, whatever, it could be a lamp, for 200 milliseconds. And so you can see, and this is the way Python, you know, does some things where we have named parameters that make it pretty clear, we hope, what's actually going on here. And then lastly, I want to talk about two kind of important commands that point to some features that the PROC hardware has. One of them is the watchdog tickle. So the PROC has, if you're familiar with watchdogs, it has a watchdog circuit, and this watchdog circuit needs to be tickled once every second, I think. And essentially, this is like a dead man switch. So if by some chance your software has some bugs in it and maybe it crashes, the PROC is going to notice that your software has gone away and it's going to cut off all your drivers. So this can save you a lot of fuses or having to file an insurance claim against your house burning down or something like that. And then the last command here is proc.flush. Flush just sends all of the command data out to the PROC. And this is separate from driver pulse or watchdog tickle because those commands are really small. There's only a few bytes there, and it's really inefficient if we send out, you know, little tiny bits of data over and over again. So we gang it all up and send it all out at once. In reality, we do that pretty quickly, but it helps to gang it up like that. So let's get to the meat of the conversation here, PyProc Game. So PyProc Game, as I mentioned before, is it's a rule set development framework. It's object-oriented, it's open source, it's available on GitHub right now. You can download it, you can modify it, you can fork it if you're familiar with the all the Git stuff. And you know, more than anything, it's a collection of classes that are built to work together to make it easier for you to write pinball software. And we wrote this, you know, as part of developing the Judge Dredd code, so we think that, you know, some pretty good, I'm not going to pat ourselves on the back too much, but you know, we think there's some good decisions in there which make it, you know, fun and relatively easy to write pinball software. And one thing I want to underscore before I move on is that even though all these classes are designed to work together, we've tried to make decisions in key places so that if you're not using a DMD on your custom game, like let's say you want to use an LCD, you can just not use the parts of the DMD stuff. You're not going to be like stepping over potholes where you're, you know, not using the DMD code. But before we get to some actual code for PyProc game, I need to talk about something important. These are machine configuration files. Machine configuration file is a YAML file, which you may be familiar with. It's a plain text, you know, kind of a, it's not markup language, but it's a plain text file format that's a, you know, a configuration file. So you can see we've got a section here that describes the game, and we describe the machine type that ties into that that pinproc call that we saw before. And that sets up the defaults, define the number of balls. We're also going to define some switches here. Of course, in a real game, there'd be dozens of these, but this slide's only so large. So we have, you know, lower left flipper information, saucer information. One thing that you can define here that's really helpful, if you may know that mechanical switches and optos work differently. Optos are normally closed, I believe, and you know, mechanical switches are normally open. So you can code that information here, and then within PyProc game, refer to switches as active or inactive, which indicates whether the ball is there or the ball is not there. So you don't have to think about whether the switch is an opto or not. We're going to define some coils. And the whole idea here is we're assigning a name to a number, essentially, so that your code becomes more readable, as you'll see. And it's, you know, you're not doing something like in that earlier slide where you're pulsing coil 8. Well, you know, you're only going to remember what coil number 8 is for, well, maybe longer than I'm giving you credit for, but it's going to be hard. So you're not going to want to do it. and then maybe most interesting about this slide, so we have these sections, flippers and bumpers. And you'll notice that the names here, for the flipper lower left anyway, match up with the other names. So the PyProc game software looks at the machine configuration file. It sees, oh, you're defining flippers. Well, I know how to configure a pretty good switch rule set, like Jerry was talking about, to make the flippers work. And so it can do that for you, so you don't have to, you know, basically these are things that we did to make it so that you can ramp up very easily and you don't have to have a whole bunch of boilerplate code in your game to make it work. Okay, so actual classes. There's two really key ones. The first one is game controller. In the game controller, there's only going to be one, and that refers to your actual game. It's kind of the object that controls everything. And it also does something interesting, which is it makes that get events call. So it gets the switch events, and then it sends them out to all of your mode classes. So you're going to be subclassing game controller and mode, I mean, separately, of course. And so the mode subclasses are going to be what actually register for switch events and, you know, receive those switch events from the game controller. So let's look at what all is contained in the game controller. We have some game data, so the set of the current set of players that are playing, machine configuration file, so, you know, just basic state information about what's going on in the game. We have what we call game items, so these are all the physical, you know, the physical components of the game, so switch, coil, lamp, well, plural of all those, which you would refer to by name using the YAML file that we talked about before. We also have the mode queue, which is a collection of modes, and they're organized in a priority queue. And the reason this is important is because you can set a priority on a mode that indicates this mode should receive switch events before, you know, lower priority modes. And you might be able to imagine how that would be helpful in designing a game. And then finally we have the run loop, which is what I referred to earlier a little bit, which gets the switch events, hands them off to the mode queue to be processed, and then flushes the buffer and tickles the watchdog. Crystal clear? Good. Okay. So, I just want to summarize on modes here because they are, you know, really pretty important. Once again, modes are logical subsets of game functionality. Really, what that, and I should underscore this also, you know, if you're a pinball player, you think of modes as like the Mamushka or Lost in the Zone. That's a pretty huge mode, right? Modes to players are very, very high-level concepts. In PyProc game, modes can be whatever layer is appropriate to, whatever level of complexity is kind of up to you to decide how you want to organize your modes. So you may make modes that, as we'll see in a second here, are very, very simple. They're just focused on, operating one piece of hardware, like a drop target bank or something. Okay, so let's look at what a simple saucer mode would look like. So we're going to define a new subclass of mode here. It's called simple saucer. And if you're not familiar with Python, or you can just kind of bear with me, I think this might still make some sense. And then we're going to define a switch handler so we can actually make this saucer do something. And so the switch handler name here is SW for switch, saucer, active. And hopefully that's kind of clear what this is saying. This is saying that for the switch named saucer, whenever that switch becomes active, call this method and make something happen. And the way this actually works is when your mode is created, we use some of those introspection features of Python to look through the class's modes, see what all their names are, and then we look for ones that have that kind of format, that SW underscore name underscore, and then active, inactive, etc. So we can find those. So really it's one of the reasons that we designed it like this is because personally, as a programmer, I always hate like having to register switch handlers or just event handlers. I don't want to say, send me this. I just want to be able to define it in a meaningful way and have it automatically be sent out. So that's what this enables us to do. So you don't have to, if you change the switch name, you only have to change it in one place or so. So we're going to do something in this switch handler here. We're going to say self.game.lamps.5k.schedule. What does that mean? So we're saying self.game, that's a reference to our game controller object. And our game controller object has an object called lamps, which is a collection of all of our lamps that we defined in the machine configuration file. We just so happen to have a lamp called 5k, and we're going to send it the schedule command, which Jerry was talking about earlier. We're going to send it the schedule command with the schedule of FF00, FF00. And if you're familiar with hex code, that's just 1111, 000, 1111, you can imagine. So this would make our lamp called 5K start kind of flashing, right? And that's really, you can see dot, dot, dot. There's two parameters that I left off there, but they're really simple. Really pretty easy to start a lamp flashing. Now here's another switch handler. And this one's a little more sophisticated looking than the previous one. So switch, saucer, active for 500 milliseconds. So that means that once the saucer switch is in the active state, once the ball has been on that switch for 500 milliseconds, which is a pretty long time, then call this method, and only then. And if you've thought about writing pinball code, you may have thought about how the ball may go into the saucer and bounce right back out. It doesn't actually settle in most of the time. Maybe you need to adjust your game if it's doing that. But the ball is wild, as they say. So it turns out to be really helpful to have switch handlers like this and to not have to do a bunch of icky code to make that work. So the mode stuff is able to look at this method name and say, oh, okay, 500 milliseconds. You could use any value there. You can use, 5 seconds or 2 seconds or 1 millisecond or whatever. Whatever is appropriate for your switch. And now in this step, we're going to take that same 5K lamp. We're going to turn it off with the disable command. We're going to award 5,000 points to the player. And then you'll see we're dipping into this coils collection here. We're finding the eject coil, and we're going to pulse the eject coil. So that's going to, kick the ball right back out. And if you're thinking about this critically, you'll recognize that, you know, there's probably a few more cases that we want to handle, and that this is probably not structured ideally for a saucer. But the point is to really just to this slide is just an excuse to demonstrate how switch handlers work. Okay, so we have our simple saucer. How do we actually use it within the game? So we're defining a new subclass here. We probably would have done this earlier in the process, but we're calling it My Game because we're not very imaginative. And we're going to, it's a subclass of Basic Game. I haven't talked about Basic Game, but Basic Game is itself a subclass or a kind of game controller. So, and really, it's the product of Jerry and I writing a lot of different test code for this game, writing a lot of game controllers, and getting tired of using the same code over and over again. So we took the stuff that we use the most, like the DMD control stuff, and we have some stuff for showing the DMD preview on the desktop. We took that and we rolled it into this one class to make it, you know, really easy to do what we think 90% of the people will want to do. If you don't like that, you can, you know, you're certainly welcome to use game controller, and you're not going to be losing too much. So we have this method here called game started. And as you can imagine, that method gets called when the game starts. So, you know, when the ball falls into the shooter lane and all that. And then we're going to create an instance of our simple saucer method. You'll notice that we're passing the game controller, which is self, and the priority, we're setting that to 5, and then we're going to add it to the mode queue. So once modes.add gets called, you know, that mode is actually active, you know, and it's going to start receiving switch events immediately. Similarly, when the game ends, we probably don't want the saucer to keep working in the same way it was working in awarding points. So we're just going to remove the saucer from the mode queue. And at that point, it's no longer receiving switch events and, you know, it's kind of taken out of the loop. Okay, so the DMD. The DMD is one of my favorite parts of all this stuff, and I've probably spent too much time on it already. But the point is that we've taken a lot of time to make a lot of useful classes to make it, you know, as easy as I think it would be reasonable to expect controlling the DMD to be. So we have a lot of classes here, 5, but there's many more behind the scenes. A lot of them are subclasses of these. So we have animation, frame. You know, animation is a collection of frames. We have font classes. We have layers, which I'm going to talk about in detail in a second here. And we also have transitions that make it, you know, make it pretty easy to do nice transitions between layers. You know, you can imagine stuff sliding off the sides of the screen and so forth. Okay, so layers and the display controller. So a layer, as it says right there, is just something that provides a sequence of frames. So that can be anything. That could be something that just returns an animation. It could be something that's very boring and just returns one frame over and over again. The point of the layer object is to work in concert with the display controller. And the display controller, each tick of the run loop goes through, I'm sorry, that's not quite right, every DMD event that it receives, it says, okay, I need to build a new frame. So I'm going to go through the mode queue, and I'm going to start at the top, and I'm going to get the topmost mode that has a layer attribute. So it asks the mode, do you have a layer? If it has a layer, then it returns it. And basically, it composites the modes that have layers that are providing frames. It composites those all together. So that's probably pretty confusing, but you can imagine maybe if you had your mode queue and you have two modes on it, the bottom mode is just a mode that provides a score display. So you have your classic score display with like the current player's current score and the ball number. That has a layer which is delivering a frame that represents that information. And then higher up, we have, you know, maybe you start multi-ball. So we provide a new layer at that layer higher up, and that layer just gets put on top of the score display. In most cases, it's going to completely hide the score display, so you won't even know it's there. But the point is that you can add modes and remove modes, and what's displayed on the DMD will be a pretty intelligent representation of the current state of the game. And if that didn't make sense, please feel free to come up afterward and make me explain it more clearly. So we're going to add DMD to our saucer. And we're going to add a mode started. So that's pretty much just like what we saw before, what we saw in the game started method. We're going to create a new layer here called text layer. We're going to give it a font. And we're going to tell it, I want this text to be centered. We'll set the text. So you can imagine this would be telling the player, you know, shoot the saucer. Because they can't tell that they need to shoot the saucer. So, and we're going to create an animation here. We say animation.load. We'll load that from disk. And then we'll create a frame layer, which is a really the simplest kind of layer. It just returns one frame over and over again. So we've got two layers here. What are we going to do with them? We're going to create a script. Now, a script is an array of dictionaries. And each dictionary has a layer key and a seconds key. The layer indicates the layer that we just created, and the seconds indicates the number of seconds to show that layer. And then with scripted layer, we're going to pass it that script. And the point of this is we've just made a slideshow, essentially. It's just going to spend 3 seconds on one frame and then go to the next thing. And so you can use any kind of layer here and use that to create some pretty sophisticated displays. A scripted layer is a great example, I think, of a way to implement an attract mode. So you can think of attract mode flipping through, the high scores and then don't do drugs and, you know, so forth. So here's what, the DMD looks like. Hopefully you can see that. And this is all done with just layers. This particular part here is several layers all put together. And I'm not going to say that this was simple to write, but it was surprisingly simple to write compared to, you know, what you might imagine you'd have to do to make something like that happen. These are transitions happening here. Okay. So a few more important high-level classes to mention. Sound Controller allows you to play sound. You can play music and voice calls and so forth. We have a service mode, which is a, you know, out-of-the-box kind of classic service mode. We have modes that make it easy to do what we just saw there, where you're entering your high scores. So that's a kind of complicated thing, and we've done the hard work for you there. And we also have Lamp Show Controller, which I'm going to cover really, really fast. But basically, Lamp Show Controller takes a lamp show, which is a text file. And the whole reason we did this is because we thought, as you might think, that writing a whole bunch of schedule calls to do a lamp show would be a huge pain in the ass. So we created this lamp show controller that parses a text file, and the first part of the text file is the lamp name or coil name or what, you know, you can do whatever you want here, but in this case it's a lamp name. And then you can see off to the right here we've got some dots here. Those are just periods in our text file. So you can edit a text file to make, you know, whatever kind of crazy lamp show thing you want. And we think that, you know, short of having an actual graphical program to do all this for you, it's a pretty good way to do it. So finally, you saw the old demo. I want you to see, and that's the thing that we made like 10 months ago. I want you to see what some people have done with PyProc Game, who have really taken it and run with it. And they've got some, I think it's safe to say we're kind of blown away. I don't want to build it up too much. It's going to suck. It's really going to suck. But no, actually. I think you'll like it. Here it goes. They made all that in like 1 week. It's pretty impressive. So, no, not really. That took them. I'm sure that all that was a lot of work for them. But I'm really impressed with what they've done. I hope you can see the, you know, I mean, you can really make a professional level game. I mean, I know that one of them is a professional graphics guy, but you know, you don't actually have to be, you know, Williams or Stern to crank out something that looks really amazing. So hopefully you see some of the potential here, and I'm going to hand it off to Jerry to wrap it up.
Thanks, Adam. So that's pretty much all we have. If you want more information about the PROC board, then you can go to www.pinballcontrollers.com. There's some forums there. There's documentation. There's pretty much anything you need to know about the hardware. And for more information about the software framework that Adam just went through in detail, you can visit pyprocgame.pindev.org, and there's all the documentation for the software there. If anyone has any questions, we can open the floor for questions. Sure, go ahead.
Is there a way to have two games interact? Almost like a head-to-head competition type thing, or like where something that happens on one table affects what's going on the other, like opening or closing something?
Sure, so the question, if everyone couldn't hear that, is can you set up two machines or perhaps use two PROCs in different machines and have those machines communicate with each other, perhaps to set up a competition or a tournament mode or something like that? And the answer is, since you're using a computer to run your game code, you can do anything you want. Your computer may have a network connection. You can have them talk to each other. It may have, I don't know, a wire going back and forth between them, a serial port or something connecting the machines together. You can write code to do whatever you want. There are libraries for Python that'll interface to a network, or you can run a web server on your machine and expose your scores, your high scores, to the web for people to see. You can automatically tweet somebody's high score when they get it. You can do whatever you want. So absolutely, yes, you can configure multiple machines to talk to each other. They don't even have to be in the same room. They could be totally across the country from each other. So yes, you can do that and a whole lot more. Yes, in the back.
How hard would it be here to
Sure. So the question is it easy, or how easy is it to swap out the dot matrix display or your visual feedback with something like an LCD? And mechanically, it's kind of up to you to do that, obviously. But is there support for it with the PROC and the software? Again, since you're using a computer to do these things, you could just hook up an LCD to your VGA output or your DVI output and write your own graphics software and absolutely drive a monitor.
And I don't know if you're asking about this part, but we also supply code to display the DMD code, the DMD output on your VGA stuff. So if you want a more classic look with the DMD, that's possible too. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Yes.
When you install the PROC, would it have access to the sound ROMs and call outs and things that are in the existing ports?
So the question is, do we, with the PROC board and with our software, have access to existing sound ROMs or perhaps video ROMs that come in the machines? And the answer is no. We don't want to step on anyone's copyrights or anything else. Everything you do with a PROC board should be, this is the company line at least, should be custom. You need to write your own sounds, you need to write your own video. If you want to access the ROMs yourselves, by all means, figure out a way to do it and do it, but no, we do not provide access to the existing ROMs. However, again, since you're using a computer, it's very easy to play media files, whether it's sound or video or anything else. Yes?
There's a lot of access to existing ROMs already. Is there a way, like, if you were to take your main board out of, like, say, a Twilight Zone and put a PROC into it, is there a way you could get, like, have, like, a way to change it over if you wanted to run your original Twilight Zone ROM?
Yeah, good question. Something I wanted to talk about. I'm glad you brought it up. So the question is, if you take out your CPU board and put in a PROC, do you lose the ability to run your original code since it's in a game ROM that runs on the original CPU board? And the answer is that we've written a driver for the PinMame software that will, in fact, run the original game ROMs, the software copy that's on your computer of that ROM, and will, in fact, run it on your machine. So yes, you can choose to run in real time the software that you've written, your custom software, or you can run PinMame, and it will work through the PROC board. In fact, anyone who's interested in seeing that, we can run that today on Rob's Judge Dredd machine, and I can show you that I can switch back and forth between our custom software and the original Judge Dredd software. It takes 3 seconds to switch over. Please.
I don't know about everybody else in the room, but one of the big things that I've always wanted to do is literally just change music and sound that's on a game. I'm going to give an example. Indiana Jones, in my personal opinion, was one of the best sounding games, really kept it in the theme of the game. Started came out with Pirates of the Caribbean, totally lost it. You could hear it. I mean, Park Screaming's got one of the best soundtracks out there in the movie. And to be able to tweak something like that with a tool like this, especially like you mentioned, if you have a lot of this probably in your own program, but to be able to tweak something like that and add that depth and that, you know, that original sound from that movie would just make that game rock. And is that, with Pin Man, with P-Rock, is that a possibility?
So let me rephrase the question to make sure I have it. You asking, can you take an existing game with their game code and just swap out sound packages, or take an existing sound package and swap out rules? It's a similar question to the question about, do you have access to the sound ROMs? And directly the answer is no. There are tricks you can use to do these kind of things, but the P-Rock itself does not give you access. Because you're swapping out the CPU board, you're getting rid of your original game code and your sound ROMs. Using PinMame, like I said, there are tricks you can do to access that stuff, but officially we do not support that and don't even encourage it. Yes?
Limitations on the board, since the beginning of the computers, we always run into limitations with how much sound we put on a machine, how much data is, we talking about external ROMs here, or we talking microchip, what are we talking about?
Okay, so the question is, are there limits to the amount of sound information you could build into your machine, or video clips? Are you limited by some sort of a memory limit? And the answer, again, is since you're using a computer, your sound files, your video files, your game code, all that will be sitting on your hard drive. So you're limited by the size of the computer you put together. If you want to use a little tiny computer with a little SD flash card, then you're limited by the size of that flash card. If you want to use a 1 terabyte hard drive, then you can fill it up with as much as you can imagine. But good question. Anybody else? Yes.
The DraftDMP, is there software out there that allows you to easily create something that fits in that matrix size?
Oh, yeah. So I believe the question is, do we have tools to help you generate content for the DMD? That is a good question. We have a script that makes it pretty easy to convert, like, you know, single image files. And I believe we have a script that, it's been a while since I've touched it, but I believe we have a script that does like QuickTime movies or, you know, whatever. That's a possibility. And we also have a tool called DMD Animator, which only runs on the Mac, unfortunately for the non-Mac users. But so that's out there. And so that kind of, does that answer? I think that kind of sums up the tools that are available for that.
I have a question to expand on that. Could you, since it just loads frame by frame, could you just have like a series of maybe like PNG or JPG images displayed?
So could you have just a series of PNG or JPEG images to show whatever you want to? Right now, to do it, you would need to convert them to the .dmd format. But if you're handy with C, I could easily imagine that you could make it a whole lot faster and play them directly from the PNG and JPEG files. Or even like a QuickTime movie. Yes?
So what are the chances of Stern adopting all this as their basic platform for their games?
I can't comment on that. No, I'm not implying that anything's happening. I don't know. That's a good question for them. Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, what are the odds of Stern adopting any of this? And we have no idea, unfortunately.
So basically, we could take, let's say, a P-Rock or your system and maybe a Rotten Dog WPC driver board.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of the sound boards of Rotten Dogs put together for WPC and kind of jealous together. Or my old WPC game is dead and resurrected.
So the question is, when you're putting together, I guess, a homebrew machine or you're building a machine, do you have to scavenge from existing machines and basically kill one machine to create a new one? Or can you put together a homebrew machine buying off-the-shelf parts, whether it's a power driver board or transformer or whatever from somebody else? And the answer is you can do that. In fact, I have a couple customers who are doing just that are buying, I believe they're buying Stern White Star power driver boards, getting the transformer, and putting it together. The other interesting thing is the P-Rock has, I don't know if you can see it from where you are, but there's a connector over here that looks like a hard drive connection for power. And in fact, it is. So you can power the P-Rock board using a PC power supply. And if you want to build your own machine, you could theoretically, if you're comfortable building your own driver circuit, you could connect it to an off-the-shelf power supply to supply 512, maybe high voltage, 70 volts or something for your coils. You don't have to use a transformer. I mean, there's no connection on the PROC board itself that accepts the transformer output, so you would have to either convert that transformer using your power driver board or connecting it directly to a DC power supply. But you have a number of options on how you build your homebrew machine. You just need to figure out what works best for you and how much money you want to spend. Anybody else? No? Well, thanks for coming. Hope you've learned a little bit about how you can build custom software. Again, we will be most of the day over in Rob's classic pinball area. We have a Judge Dredd machine over there that he's letting us borrow. Come by, look at the latest software, play a couple games, see that it's real. You can, in fact, do this. You know, we have, in fact, done it. Ask whatever questions pop up. Feel free. And like I said earlier, I'll have some boards for sale if anyone's interested in buying one, taking one home and giving this a shot. I have them available. So thanks for coming.